News, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And thank you again for tuning in. I'm here live on Saturdays from 10 to noon at iHub Radio. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. First hour, I was talking almost entirely about the fact that I'm concerned about the president's mental health. I'm concerned about our general welfare because of the president's mental health. And I want to just quickly run down a few reasons why the president is under such pressure right now. Yeah, he can't be out there rallying the troops. And, you know, he still believes that insane thing that he said during the election when he was running for president, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and his people would still be with him. I think that may be true, and that is as scary as hell. That anyone not only might do that and get the support, but that someone believes that's true about themselves. He lost another one in the federal court, a lawsuit that was accusing Donald Trump of profiting off his presidency through that luxury Washington hotel, was in fact thrown out by one court and has now been reinstated by a federal appeals court. This was a lawsuit brought by the state of Maryland and the District of Columbia, saying that Trump had violated that thing called the Emoluments Clause, where the president is not supposed to profit through foreign and domestic officials giving the president money. This is to help avoid any possibility of bribery. Well, that hotel, foreign dignitaries, domestic officials have been staying at the Trump International Hotel like crazy, and don't think the president doesn't know who does that. And that's putting money in his pocket, especially because he supposedly turned over all his business interests to his two sons. But come on, he didn't. The court said, "We recognize that the president is no ordinary petitioner, and we accord him great deference as the head of the executive branch. But Congress and the Supreme Court have severely limited our ability to grant the relief the president is seeking by appealing the original ruling that said that he was inappropriately profiting as president." His lawyers had argued that the two Democrat attorneys general from Maryland and District Attorney Carl Racine, that they were both Democrats and they lacked the authority to sue the president. And the court said, no, they don't lack the authority, that in fact, the case against the president in this regard would continue. Okay. So what else might be upsetting the president? Well, the Supreme Court heard testimony about whether President Trump is immune from investigation. Again, this is about, hey, I'm the president. I can do whatever I want, and there is no recourse as long as I'm still the president. Well, that isn't true. Trump, in front of the Supreme Court, through the lawyers representing him, was claiming that a president has temporary absolute immunity, meaning he cannot be criminally investigated while in office. Not even prosecuted, but even investigated. His lawyer said in front of the Court of Appeals in New York that if the president were to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, he could not be investigated or indicted for that until he left office. Now, that to me is absurd on its face. The Constitution never says anything to the extent that the president is immune from investigation for things he has done before or does while in office. And the court in the past has allowed investigation of a president even for things he supposedly did before he was president. The case of Paula Jones and President Bill Clinton. So what else is new? Well, the Supreme Court hasn't come down with their ruling yet, and it is believed that they will try and split the baby, so to speak, and hold okay to investigate on one level but not on another. And these investigations include an investigation of the president's activities in paying off Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet in the state of New York. New York is suing him, and that's one part of this case. And Congress is asking for financial data from Deutsche Bank and from President Trump's accounting firm. That's the other part. There are those who believe that the Supreme Court will kind of split their decision and hold that maybe it's okay for New York to get that information, but maybe not Congress or vice versa. Now, the Supreme Court is also hearing another case, which will probably get all of these decisions in June when the court recesses this year. This one is about something called faithless electors. This is another reason why the president might be getting a little concerned. You know that when you vote, you're not voting directly for the candidate who's running for president. You are running for electors from your state to then vote for who becomes president. There are 538 presidential electors, and the question is, are they free agents or must they vote in accordance with the election results in their state? If they're free to vote as they wish, a small group of them, or even a single elector in a tight contest, could decide who wins the White House, regardless of how their state voted or how the country voted. When voters go to the polls, they don't vote directly for the candidate. They choose this slate of electors appointed in their individual states by the political parties of the candidates. Those electors, we vote in November. Those electors meet in December to cast their ballots. And in most states, they vote the way their state voted. So in more than half the country, the electors are required to obey the results of their state's popular vote. However, in Colorado, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver said that electors can vote for any legitimate candidate. They don't have to vote just for whoever their state voted for. There's also a case in the state of Washington where the Washington State Supreme Court said the law does require the electors to follow whatever the popular vote was in their state. Now, there are those who would like electors in any state not to have to follow the vote of their state, but to have to follow the popular vote of the country. Supreme Court is going to come down with some kind of a decision about whether or not electors are independent. Now, the president is also unhappy about what's going on in what he calls the deep state. And yesterday, he fired another inspector general. All of the agencies of the federal government have what are known as inspectors general, who are independent, nonpartisan, regardless of what president may have appointed them. Many of them have been there for a long time through lots of presidents. But the inspectors general are supposed to be an objective, impartial source to see if anything's going wrong that shouldn't be going wrong. Well, the State Department has an inspector general named Steve Linick, and he was just fired by the administration. And interestingly enough, two of the most read reports in the past year put out by this inspector general for the State Department involved retaliation by political appointees put in positions by President Trump against career employees who those Trump appointees thought were part of the deep state. People who didn't like the president or weren't happy about him being president, and we got to get them out of the State Department. They're part of the deep state. Well, interestingly enough, bad enough that Steve Linick had put out these reports about retaliation by Trump appointees against career employees in the State Department. But he also apparently uncovered political bias at the agency. And it is alleged that he was opening investigation into Secretary of State Mike Pompeo for using State Department employees apparently to do personal errands and personal work for both Mike Pompeo and his wife. People who head up agencies aren't supposed to use government employees to do their personal errands or personal work. A lot of things are not going right for the president right now, least of all to mention the virus. And on that, first of all, we have to say that Mitch McConnell, who is the head of the Republican head of the Senate, he had to admit he was wrong. He was in an interview with the president's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, who is married to Eric. And she is also a campaign advisor. And she was interviewing McConnell for an online interview that she does from time to time that they then put out over the president's media outlets. And McConnell said, there was no game plan in place to deal with this virus when we came into office. Well, that's just patently untrue. And McConnell finally had to admit, yeah, you know, they did leave behind a plan. I clearly made a mistake. He didn't apologize, but that's about as close as they ever come. Whether the plan was followed, he didn't have any observation about that because he didn't know enough about the details. Oh, really? There was a plan. The incoming administration under Donald Trump was briefed about the plan. Not only did they not follow the plan, but look at the result we've got now with regard to this virus.
From Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
So let me tell you something about this virus that we are all living with. This is the end of my 9th week in the house. I started the second week of March, about March 9th. I've been in the house since then, except when I go to the market or when I come here to do the show. And one thing that has become very clear through all of this crazy stay-at-home, essential workers who are also somewhat expendable, there's a reason why we need to have a safety net in this country. I have often said, although I get accused, oh, you're one of those socialists, I'm not a socialist. I think capitalism and competition are just fine. I'm one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet. But I also happen to believe that there should be a floor below which no one can fall, especially in the richest country on the face of the earth. There are basic human needs that a government should be able to guarantee to every person. Above those basic needs, basic housing, and I mean basic. I don't care if it's one room, but a roof over your head, the ability to eat, and to access medical care when you need it. Those are the basics that no one who is a human being in today's world should be denied. Even refugees in camps are given a tent and food and health care in most cases. And in the richest country in the world, it shouldn't even be an issue. Well, right now, because of this virus, we've got almost 23 million people on unemployment. 36 million Americans have filed jobless claims just in the past 2 months. 3 million of them just last week. States, many states, Florida comes to mind, did not have the kind of staff or the kind of systems in place, basic computer systems that would let people apply online without crashing. Lots of people haven't even been able to get their unemployment claims processed. One in every four United States restaurants is going to go out of business. 25% of our restaurants will be out of business, in spite of the fact that Congress allocated all kinds of money that was supposed to help small businesses survive and was gobbled up by lots of businesses that weren't so small. Safety nets are critical so that all of those people who are losing their jobs as a result of this don't also lose their homes. You've got record numbers of people outside of food banks, people who never thought they would ever need that kind of help. And so it is worth asking, how are other countries with different economies coping through this virus? Because there are a lot of countries, especially in Europe, who really got struck the same way that we really got struck. But there's an interesting comparison between the United States and countries like Canada, Norway, England, Australia, Denmark, New Zealand, France, the Netherlands, and Germany. Countries that are part of the first world, they're not third world countries, that have governments that are not unlike ours, elected democracies, that are competitive societies and capitalist societies to a great extent, but with a big distinction between those other countries and the United States. All of those other countries have basic health guaranteed to everyone in the country. And the countries that have had the smallest increases in unemployment throughout this virus, those governments have put in place programs that directly pay companies to keep their workers. The details may be different in some places. In Australia, Denmark, and New Zealand, they have brand new programs that they created to make sure that people would be able to retain their jobs. The company may not be open, but the employees are guaranteed that those jobs will be there once the virus abates and people can reopen their businesses. Germany had existing programs that they have expanded. So did France. All of them have tried to maintain the connection between the employer and the employee, even while the economy is temporarily shut down. In the United States, we don't have those programs. Most of our stimulus did not support companies keeping employees on the payroll. As a result, we're going to have a harder time working our way out of this mess than those other countries are. Shouldn't we have learned by now?
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, how are other economies doing in this time of virus compared to the United States? I talked about the fact that other well-developed economies around the world, democracies, Australia, Denmark, New Zealand, countries like that, they have put in place, the government is paying companies to keep their workers at full salaries as if they were on the job. So this is a way that even though the company may have to be closed, the workers know they will have jobs to go back to when things can reopen. We do not have anything even approaching that. And as a result, let me just give you an idea of the difference this makes. Plus, again, I will say all those countries, people have access to health care. But in the United States, our unemployment number this past week was almost 15%. It was under 5% when all of this started. And we were doing very well in terms of people being employed, even though minimum wage people had to work more than one job. But we now are at almost 15% as of this past week. It will go up again. 15% unemployment. Germany and the Netherlands are at 0.1% unemployment. France, 0.4% unemployment. Even New Zealand is just barely above 1.5% unemployment. This is the difference it makes in a competitive democracy when the government understands that it has a responsibility to its citizens, especially in a time of great distress like this virus. Now, in Germany, which has done almost the best of all of the European countries at controlling the virus and controlling the number of people who have been infected and who have died, since they've eased their lockdown, they are seeing coronavirus cases nearly triple, which is why in order to get rid of the lockdown, you got to make sure that it's done properly. Now, there are some countries that have been held up as an example of why we should not have locked down. Sweden, for example, they're working on this idea of herd immunity. We're going to trust people to take responsibility, to not go out in big groups, to stay home as much as they can. The Swedish people feel a sense of responsibility to each other. Sweden has stayed wide open during the pandemic, even while much of Europe was shut down. New numbers have come out, and it's true that Sweden avoided the devastating outbreaks in Italy and Spain and England. But 27% more people died in Sweden than is normal at this time of year during this period. That increase is very similar to that of the United States and far higher than the increases that were seen in countries like the Netherlands or Norway or Finland or Denmark. So yes, they've stayed open and they're working on this idea of herd immunity, which the president unfortunately has now learned to add to his repertoire of the few phrases he can recall without having to flail his mind too much. But that herd immunity means that more 27% more people died than is normal at this time in Sweden. That's a lot of people. Now, why are we all so restless about staying home this long? As I said, I'm at the end of my ninth week. But the whole idea of staying home was to give the country time to put in place a program that would successfully control the virus. Without a program of testing and screening to focus on where the hotspots are and to control what's going on in those hotspots so that this infectious disease does not get out, the general public has now realized we have many more months of work, travel, and recreational constraints ahead of us because our government did not do that in a timely way, quick enough, and with a government approach that the states could then implement, where guidelines would be followed rather than being thrown out as if they weren't really guidelines by no less than the president himself. Now, as a result of people being so pent up and going crazy about having to stay home so long, you've seen things like what has gone on in Michigan and in Texas, where people with guns are showing up to protest. They, by God, have a right to go out there and be exposed to the virus if they choose to. And a lot of these are people who say, oh, I don't even know anybody who got the virus or died from the virus. The chances of my getting it are slim. Well, guess what? Talk to anybody who's had the virus. Those slim chances, you don't want to risk it, because this really is a debilitating illness. But in Michigan, and with the support of the president, you need to liberate those states, the ones that are being run by these Democratic governors that are trying to keep you in your house, keep you from going to work, keep you from being able to get out and make the economy good again. In Michigan, they're trying to decide whether they should ban guns in the Capitol building. And an armed militia, the Michigan militia, came out to help a Michigan barbershop open, in spite of the fact that it was against the rules the state had put in place. Armed members of this group called the Michigan Home Guard stood outside this barbershop ready to blockade the door if the police arrived. Now, remember that thing I talked about in the first hour about how the president may have emergency powers to declare martial law? Well, if there are guns in the street and people with guns are going up against law enforcement and there is this kind of potential for violence, president can call a national emergency and put martial law in place. And then, instead of militias, we'll have military with their guns in the streets. And gosh, if we reach that situation, we may have to rethink holding an election in November. There's another thing about what's going on with this virus that really has me ticked off. there are about 27 million people who will be forced off of any kind of health insurance because it was provided by their employers, and their employers are now closed down, and they may be losing jobs, and they're losing their health coverage. Because in this country, we don't make sure that everyone has access to health care. Now, many of those people will be signed up for other ways of getting coverage. But millions will be left uninsured in the middle of a pandemic. The House of Representatives, the Democrats in the House, are trying to pass something that would make it easier for those people to be able to get some kind of coverage. But the Republicans, you know, they just don't think that's really that important. And as many as 43 million Americans could lose health coverage, 27 million already shoved off of it because of loss of jobs. Where is the president's excellent health care? He's been in office for 3.5 years. He and the Republicans have never put forward a proposal for health care for the American people. Never. He wants us to wait until his second term, and then he'll propose this wonderful health care. And meanwhile, he's still, through his attorney general, in court trying to totally get rid of Obamacare, which at least gave many millions of people some kind of coverage. Now, an interesting thing is that in South Dakota, you know, there have been a lot of stories about how this virus is affecting tribal lands. And in South Dakota, the governor, Kristi Noem, told Native American tribes, and there's a lot of tribal land in South Dakota, told the Native American tribes they had 48 hours to take down road checkpoints that they set up to keep unnecessary visitors out of their lands because they were concerned about people bringing in the virus. Because a lot of people like to go to Native lands, you know, to sightsee and to interact with the tribes and whatever might be going on. Both the Oglala Sioux tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe set up these checkpoints to lock down their reservations because they didn't want people coming in from outside and infecting their members, who very often don't have the same kind of ability to separate themselves or to have access to health care that people might have outside of tribal lands. Well, this is setting up a legal showdown between a governor who did not want those stay-at-home orders and tribes that are saying they have a sovereign right that allows them to control who comes on their reservation. The checkpoints were set up to keep out tourists or other visitors who could bring in the virus. They still did allow essential businesses onto the reservations. But now the governor is suing the tribes because she does not believe that they should have the right to control their own lands at a time like this. And it turns out that those rural areas across the country that thought that they didn't have to worry about the virus because they don't have that many people and people live far apart anyway, well, nearly three quarters of Americans live in counties where the virus is now spreading widely. And another 200 counties have seen significant growth in the infections just over the last week. The virus is radiating out from large cities into more rural areas. And by the end of March, 83% of counties where the virus was highly prevalent were in the Northeast, but in the last 5 weeks, the majority of counties are in the southern and western states. This is no joke, folks. Bad enough that we may have mosquitoes that are bringing some horrible disease and murder hornets, but this virus kills people.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, we are in our last segment. Thank you so much for joining me live on Saturdays from 10 to noon here at iHub Radio. Final word that I want to give you about the virus. I read an amazing story in the New York Times by a woman named Mara Gay, M-A-R-A, and her last name is G-A-Y, Mara Gay. The headline on it was, "I wish I could do something for you," my doctor said. She said, "Young, healthy people like me, 33, healthy, a runner, one day okay, and the next day in the emergency room, unable to breathe. We are getting very, very sick from the disease caused by the coronavirus." Her story, that includes what happened the day before she got sick, when she ran 4 miles and then walked another 10 miles and jaunted up the 4 flights to her apartment and was feeling fine and take good care of herself and no underlying health problems. And the next day she woke up and she said she felt like burning tar was in her lungs. Burning tar. And she could hardly breathe. By the time she got to the emergency room, she was very ill. And that's where the title of her article came from. The doctor said to her, "I wish I could do something for you." She never was on a ventilator, but she was in the hospital for a while. And then she was finally sent home with some of those... what do they call those things where you, inhalers, the little inhalers. She was sent home with those. She has to do that 3 or 4 times a day. She is still trying to get her ability to breathe back. She can no longer run. She can barely walk without losing her breath and feeling weak. And then she said, "And although in Germany they send healthcare workers to your home to help and to look into how you're doing, here you're alone. And weeks later, I still don't feel like myself. I have no energy. I have to use an inhaler. I'm still struggling to breathe." Those who don't think that this virus is going to get them, because they don't know anybody who's had it and they don't know anybody who died, and they think that it's all just being hyped up to hurt the president somehow. Let me tell you that every person I have listened to who has had this illness and has recovered from it, they all tell a very similar story. Some people are affected only mildly. Some people suffer and barely are able to get their lives back. However, there is a piece of good news, or at least kind of funny news. I love this story. This is also related to the virus. When I was growing up in West Los Angeles, Culver City, we used to have a milkman who came by and dropped milk off on the front porch. Bottles of cold, fresh milk that had a thick cream across the very top of the bottle that you could skim off. We had the Helms Bakery truck that came by every day with a very distinctive woot, woot and we'd go out and buy bread and rolls and things like that. That's how old I am. And my birthday is tomorrow. And I'm a maniac. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. Milkmen are returning. Glass bottles are gone, and the cream-topped bottles of milk have been replaced by things like oat milk and almond milk. They even have a Snickers-flavored milk. But the milkman is back because customers want home delivery in this world that has been so changed as a result of the virus. I have this theory that there is something that we will someday call the virus generation. And not unlike the hippie generation from the 60s and 70s, the virus generation is going to be totally comfortable with communal living because nobody is going to be able to afford an apartment anymore because nobody's got a job anymore. They're growing their own food. Big uproar when the governor of Michigan closed down stores in Michigan and wouldn't allow stores to sell seeds because people have gotten into gardening and growing their own vegetables. Not unlike the hippie generation, people are not going to feel good about being able to get regular jobs or want to work a 9-to-5 job because so many companies are just absolutely doing in their workforce. So they're going to be free to pursue their own muse because now they're going to be living communally and therefore they can afford to pursue their muse. Wearing very comfortable clothes. Sweatpants are selling out like hotcakes. Even Goop is selling these great jogging outfits that fit like a glove. And if you have a body like Gwyneth Paltrow, they're great. But comfort clothes are in. We're not getting haircuts. Guys' hair is growing long and man buns are in. So hopefully, if there is a virus generation that is emulating the 60s and 70s generation, well, maybe they will also make the decision to change the world. We did, and we got some things changed. But I will never forget when I met Steve Lawrence, the great singer, and I was running for Congress as a Democrat at the time against Sonny Bono. And Steve Lawrence said, well, he had become a Republican. And I was shocked and surprised. And I said, you're kidding. Why? And he said, well, I've become a conservative now that I have something to conserve. That about says it all. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, live on Saturdays from 10 to noon. Here at iHub Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. And just stay focused on trying to stay calm as you watch the president's mind flail. We will get through this. Whatever you do may seem insignificant, but it's important that you do it